Hi, this is Kay with Cafe, and I'm here with another episode of Conversations with NUSD, our podcast for the Natomas Unified School District. Today, I am talking to a very special guest, Chris Didier. Chris, welcome to the podcast. For people who may not know you, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Kay. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to share our story. My name is Chris Didier. I'm originally from Sacramento, California. I graduated from Christian Brothers High School. After that, I went to college in Colorado at the Air Force Academy. Following my graduation there and receiving my commission, I went to pilot training for the Air Force in Texas, and then I flew Learjets for the Air Force in Europe, and then I went into the F-15 and flew the Strike Eagle for about 15 years. I retired after 22 years of active duty. Right before I started flying, I married a local Sacramento native named Laura Olson, and during our military career together, we had three children. And after retirement, we settled back in the Sacramento area, moved into Placer County.
And before we get into our discussion, I do want to share with families that we are going to be speaking about a very heavy topic. We are going to be talking about the fentanyl crisis and ways that we can share with families how to prevent tragedies occurring in their own families. So with that said, please take care when listening to this podcast.
Well, I have three children, one daughter, our oldest, and two sons, Sam and Zach. Zach is our youngest of three. And there is so much to share about Zach. He is an amazing soul, and he was very successful in all of the ventures he set out to participate and to face throughout his academic career in elementary, middle, and high school. I think what really stands out for him to many other students is that he was extremely successful academically. He was getting grades that were at the top of his class consistently, getting A's in every class, pretty much a straight A student, and was enrolled in every AP class he was allowed to take. Athletically, he dominated the field mostly in soccer and track and field. Those were his two favorite sports.
He sounds like such an amazing student, intelligent, talented, helpful. And I know a lot of families out there can relate to your story. So tell us about, I know this might be a little difficult, but tell us about what happened.
It was December of 2020.
And how old was Zach at the time?
He was 3 months before turning 18, so he was 17. Yeah. So what happened? That's a very common question. This is, I think, as difficult as it is to share this part, I think it's really important because it really, I think, opens the eyes to a listener to think, wow, this could actually happen to my kid or to someone I care about. In December of 2020, our mall, our local mall, opened back up for a limited capacity. It was December of 2020. It's the Galleria Mall in Roseville. And I remember when that announcement was made, Zach was really elated, thinking, oh my gosh, I can actually live like a normal high school kid as a senior. And so Zach was out there and having a good time. I know it made everyone happy. What none of us, however, understood or realized was that drug dealers and drug traffickers are also at these malls, and they are falsely advertising working solutions to potential customers. Specifically, Zach was with a friend. Actually, he was with several friends, but they were approached by a drug dealer on a social media app called Snapchat. And there's a number of ways I've learned how this happens, but in essence, a dealer could zoom in on his Snapchat map and do what's called a geotag video or some kind of story to anyone on Snapchat within his geographic range. Another thing on Snapchat is a dealer can look at a profile of another Snapchat user and can tell that this is actually a legitimate high school student and not an undercover agent, and literally can solicit a student, a potential buyer, to say, hey, I have products, I have paraphernalia. Why Zach and a friend decided to buy anything from a stranger is something we may never know the answer to. However, what we do know is that they were told that he was selling, of all the products he was offering, they decided to select something that was called a Percocet. What they understood was a legitimate Percocet pill from a pharmacy. What they did not know is that these were fake pills. They were made to look legit, but they're not. And there is a significant chance they could be lethal. Personally, I think Zach may have thought to buy this to get a safe high, thinking that heroin, cocaine, or marijuana or edibles from an unknown origin may have other products mixed into those things, and thought, well, a pharmaceutical grade pill usually isn't like that, so that's safe. Or maybe one of the other kids' theories was that they were talking about, so working theory, is that they feel like because they worked out all the time that they can get a more effective or efficient workout and not feel the pain because they have a Percocet pill. It was on December 26, 2020. Zach was with his friends. He had dinner with his girlfriend, came home a little ahead of his curfew. One tradition that we have in our family is to watch as many Christmas movies during Christmas break. And Zach had texted, hey, Dad, can we watch another Christmas movie tonight? And I said, sure thing, bud, but you got to be home by curfew. And he got home a little early. And Zach came home, looked normal, did not look buzzed or drunk or high or anything. My other kids were at the house, and so all four of us watched one of our Christmas movies. And I never really understood that there is imminent danger in Zach's pocket. However, after the movie, Zach went to bed. It was just after midnight, and we all were saying goodnight, and he said, I love you, Dad, which were his last words to me. The next day, and because it's Christmas break, it's tradition that kids, the students, the high school and college students are going to sleep in late because they're up late, either playing video games or socializing. Zach was into Minecraft with his soccer mates, and they tend to do that a lot after midnight during the breaks, summer break, Thanksgiving, and Christmas break. And it was around just after lunch, I noticed the other kids were already up, and we're all doing our thing, and I asked them, hey, has anyone seen Zach? And the other guy said, no, I haven't seen him yet. He usually announces his presence by playing the piano, and the piano remained silent that day. So I went to check on Zach and went in his room, and what I found was about 10 feet away, he was sitting at his desk, and he appeared to be asleep with his head resting on his left arm, and his right hand was near his mouse. And I thought maybe he had been playing video games or studying or doing something all night, and he just fell asleep at the desk, and thought, golly, Zach, you fell asleep at the desk. What I didn't know is he did fall asleep but never woke up. And as I approached him to wake him up, I sensed a void I had never felt before, and I knew something was horribly wrong. So I tried to wake him up and can tell that he wasn't breathing. I'm a retired military vet, and during my 26 years of being involved in the military, we were taught something called self-aid buddy care, and CPR is a big part of that, and my training just kicked in. I alerted my middle child, Sam, since I knew he was close by, to call 911 and said something's wrong with Zach. And I was starting CPR. Sam was on top of it. He said, no problem, Dad. And I can hear him approach Zach's room when he was climbing the stairs and rounding the corner. And he said, let me help. I got this. Let's do this together. And as he walked in, he said, I have the operator on speakerphone. And when he saw Zach, I looked up at Sam and the shock on his face of seeing his brother look lifeless is something I can't ever forget either. Obviously, losing a child can be at the top of any good parent's grief hierarchy, but when you know that your other children suffer and you can't do anything to stop that suffering, it adds a layer of trauma and intense grief. It's impossible to describe, and it's something no parent should experience. Anyways, I asked Sam, why don't you get the dogs, tell Allie, our oldest, what's going on, and help the firemen get in. And he left. He said, okay. And it took him, I don't know how long, not too long. I had lost temporal awareness at this point while I was doing CPR. I do remember the operator was very helpful, very calming, very professional, and was excellent, saying, okay, I want you to join me in cadence, and you do your compressions this way, and was very descriptive on how to do them, pretty much in line with what I remembered. And then med techs and firemen showed up, and from that point on, there was a rather resilient effort to try to revive Zach various ways, and those moments are really difficult to recall easily, I should say. I remember those details vividly, but it's difficult to describe them, and truly are my darkest moments in life.
So, Chris, what are the signs and what can you do?
Well, a sign of someone who may have inadvertently consumed fentanyl, whether it was a pill form or some other way, is something we need to pay attention to. In the past, when I was in high school, if someone had too much beer or something and they became sleepy, we just typically let them sleep it off. That's not what we should do now because of how fentanyl works. Fentanyl is an opioid that attaches to opioid receptors and causes extreme drowsiness. It regulates the mind's breathing cycle and actually inhibits the alarm to start breathing. And so what ends up happening is a person becomes extremely lethargic and they get to the point where they're obtunded and then they slowly stop breathing. Typically, a person sitting down at rest may breathe 10 to 12 times a minute, but after they've ingested fentanyl, it takes about 2 minutes for them to get down to, you know, it'll go from 10 or 12 times a minute to maybe 8, then 6, then 4 or 2 times a minute. And so their breathing pattern gradually slows down after about 2 minutes. Another 8 minutes or so, then they're considered legally dead. So from first ingestion to when they die, it could be as little as 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes. So signs to look for is you'll see their breathing pattern slow. Their breathing rate is not like yours. They have bluish lips or fingernails. Their eyes are not their pupils are really pinpoint. They're very small, and they're non-responsive. I like to do what's called a knuckle test. If you rub your knuckles vigorously on anyone's chest, that'll be very annoying. And even if someone's super tired, they will react to that. But if someone is impacted by fentanyl, they just will not respond to that. When in doubt, call 911. Because you're only down to a few minutes. If you call 911, what happens is it gets EMTs started. They all have Narcan or naloxone, which is a reversing agent to opioids, and can restore breathing, normal breathing. So getting 911 on the way increases the chance that the the person could survive with minimal to no brain damage. If you have naloxone or Narcan, which you can get from wellness centers, health and human service centers, or pharmacies, it's basically a nasal spray, kind of like how a person may use for when they use Afrin or some kind of nasal decongestant. And it's simple. All you do is put a spray one in a nostril and wait about 2 minutes. And if there's no reaction, there's usually a second dose in the box. You spray the second one in there. It takes about 1 or 2 minutes for it to react. And what it does is it reverses the opioid effect on your opioid receptors of the brain. So if fentanyl is attached to the receptors and causes a person to stop breathing, Narcan will remove those opioids from the receptors, and your mind's or brain's normal breathing function is restored, and the person may resume consciousness and sit up and even be confused, saying, what just happened? What's going on? Well, that's good. That's a good sign that the Narcan's working, but it's absolutely important that 911 is on their way, because the way fentanyl works is it happens in waves. Think of like being in the ocean. There's wave after wave coming, and it could take several doses of Narcan, maybe even dozens of Narcan, to help abate the effects of fentanyl until the entire fentanyl's out of their system. Depends on the concentration and doses that they consumed. So having 911 there will keep them safe. They usually have to be hospitalized. And one other point to make here is to explain the California's Good Samaritan law. California Good Samaritan law helps protect people who make an effort to help save a life. So for those young adults who are out there partying and drinking or smoking or doing whatever, please don't be afraid to call 911 to help a friend. Med techs, firemen, police, they don't care about the party. They don't care if there's someone underage drinking. All they care about is to save a life. They want to be a hero. So you are protected from the California's Good Samaritan law. You will not get in trouble if someone's truly in need and you're just trying to help them out. Also, a question that's asked is Narcan safe if someone doesn't need it? And I honestly think that's a great question. If someone is given Narcan and actually doesn't need Narcan, maybe they just truly were tired, it doesn't really have any adverse effects. Think about it like a bug spray you spray on your arm. It doesn't really do anything unless there's mosquitoes around. It'll keep the mosquitoes away. If they're around, if there aren't, it just sits on your arm. It doesn't really do anything. Just kind of like how Narcan will keep the fentanyl away if it's around. To the best of my knowledge, there is no such thing as fentanyl in pill form. Of all the Schedule II opioids, fentanyl is the most potent of all of those opioids and is the only opioid that is measured in micrograms. And you may have heard that only a few grains of salt, sand, or sugar has the potential to be lethal, enough to fit on the very tip of a pencil. Heroin, cocaine, meth does not do that. One sugar packet of fentanyl has the potential to make 1,000 lethal doses. A sugar packet of cocaine isn't enough to kill one person. So it's an extremely powerful synthetic. Since it's synthetic, you don't need a farm. You don't need farmers. It's just a lab with ingredients that you need to have to assemble it. So you people who make illicit fentanyl can make it 24/7, 365. As long as they have an endless supply of the ingredients, they will continue to make illicit fentanyl and use that powder to make fake pills that have the same shape, size, color, and markings of a legitimate pill but are fake. Or they use that illicit fentanyl powder as an adulterant in cocaine or heroin or methamphetamine, in hopes to get a consumer addicted to that product and come back for more. Fentanyl will not discriminate. It does not matter your socioeconomic group, doesn't matter your race, gender, religion. It doesn't matter. It's so important to learn what's going on and talk with your kids. So for you parents, talking about it, I can understand, is a very tricky topic. I've had many topics with my children that I end up talking about, from marijuana and edibles and safe sex and drunk driving and being a bully, all kinds of things, right? But when it comes to illicit fentanyl, I think a good approach is to say, hey guys, here's what I'm learning, and this is freaking me out. Did you know that DEA and CDC announced that the number one killer of adults between 18 and 45 is now illicit fentanyl? Did you know that the DEA estimates 6 out of 10 fake pills have the potential to be lethal? What is going on? Are you concerned? Are you seeing this? Are you hearing about this with your friends? You know, is there anything that, if you could do something, what would you do? How do you feel is the best way to bring awareness? I would also encourage parents to talk to the parents of your teen's friends so that they are in the loop and they understand, and to just promote this discussion topic. Probably for you parents with younger kids, this would be a good time to ask, hey, what do you understand how prescriptions come from the hospital or from the doctor? It's not just something mom or dad gives you, here, take this pill from your doctor, but there is a process. This could be an education opportunity to say, well, here, normally it works where a doctor writes a prescription on a paper and then you take it to a pharmacy, a certified pharmacy, and a pharmacist puts together the prescription the doctor ordered and puts your name on a bottle and it looks like this, and that's the only way we're supposed to have legitimate prescription pills. No other way. So if a teenager or a young adult or anybody really is looking to self-medicate, to experiment with different things because of how fentanyl or illicit fentanyl is being proliferated in our communities, this is not the time to experiment, because in the past, the danger was getting addicted and falling down that slippery slope of addiction. But today, especially with counterfeit pills, it could be one time. It could be the very first time. It could be even half a pill, and it is lights out. It's a no-joke situation. So we absolutely need to learn and talk. My message to the teenagers is simply this. Guys, you did not start this epidemic, this crisis, but you have the most influential power to make a difference. Your generation is the most connected of any previous generation because of the cell phone. Your mom and dad didn't have a cell phone when they were your age, and they did not deal with the stress and anxiety that was created as a high school student or a middle school student during COVID lockdowns. You did. And your feelings, your challenges of depression or anxiety or stress, you know, with relationships or with going through school, trying to pass a grade, trying to figure out which school to go to, even for you older students, which college to go through, getting through college, those stresses are real. And going to Snapchat to find a solution is not a solution. It is a very dangerous path to take. So please learn and share with each other. Learn about what the dangers are, the deception behind the dangers. The DEA announced 99% of all prescription pills sold on social media or on the streets are counterfeit. And again, 60% have the potential to be lethal. So anyone who's looking to self-medicate are taking extreme risks. So please learn and share so that you can make a very meaningful and measurable difference to stop this crisis.
Thank you so much, Chris. And for anyone out there who wants more information about Chris's story or Zach's story, you can find that on void.org, Victims of Illicit Drugs, right?
Yes. It's actually stopthevoid.org, but we just say void for Victims of Illicit Drugs.
Yes. So if there is anyone out there who wants more information about Chris Didier's story and his son Zach's story, it's stopthevoid.org. And there are also tips and other ways for you to talk about this with your students and your teenagers to prevent something like this from happening again. Chris, I'm so grateful that you were able to talk to us and share your story with us. And thank you again for joining us. That's it for us here at Natomas Unified. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kim.
This podcast is a production of the Natomas Unified School District. You can find our podcast online in the Apple Store, Google Play Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and the Natomas Unified School District website at www.natomasunified.org. You can also locate our episodes on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just look for Natomas Unified.